Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Giant decisions are taking place these days in Washington, D.C., and Utah, all over the country. Giant decisions that will affect the grand, vast wildlands in America. In Alaska, there is lots of clamor about oil, gas, and wild places. We've heard a lot about ANWR. This week, you'll learn about NPRA. What's it stand for? Big decisions about vast places when we return here on the Wildside News.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Indeed, welcome back. And now we head north to Alaska, where big news was made this last week with a press conference which focused attention on a newly emerging struggle between some old antagonists, nature industry spokespeople, and oil industry players. In the months ahead, the term NPRA will move up in the political and legal lexicons. To help us interpret NPRA and its importance, I'm honored to welcome Dr. John Shane, senior scientist, responsible for overseeing and coordinating the National Audubon's Alaska Wildlife Research. Dr. Shane is joining us now from Anchorage. Dr. Shane, let's start with an easy one. What does NPRA stand for?
Well, good morning, Sydney. NPRA stands for National Petroleum Reserve Alaska. Back in the 20s, President Harding established several naval petroleum reserves. Actually, Alaska was one of four. And in 1976, the naval petroleum reserve was transferred to BLM, and it became the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska.
Right. Now, we hear a lot about ANWR. How does NPRA relate to ANWR?
Well, your reference of ANWR is the actually the Alaska or the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and that's in the far eastern portion of the Arctic coastal plain within Alaska. It's right on the Canadian border. Some people make comparisons between the Arctic Refuge and NPRA, but that's really like comparing apples and oranges. The coastal plain of the Arctic Refuge is very, very narrow and compressed and has a very high density of concentrated wildlife during the summer, and it has the porcupine caribou herd. The National Petroleum Reserve coastal plain is much broader. It's much wetter. It actually has probably a greater abundance of water birds, and it has two caribou herds. The Teshikpuk Lake caribou herd and the Western Arctic caribou herd. So the places both have high wildlife values. They also have potential oil values, but they're really quite different.
Right, and we hear so much about ANWR. We are definitely going to hear about NPRA, and that's why I want to bring this forward. You know, it has a rather interesting history in the sense going back to the 1990s when sort of the status of this area became more significant. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and the participation of Bruce Babbitt and the decisions that were made then, because that relates to really what is happening right now.
Well, that's right. In the Clinton administration in 96, 97, 98, there was a planning effort to expand oil and gas development in the National Petroleum Reserve. And as you may know, the largest oil field in the United States is the Prudhoe Bay Kuparik, which is in the central Arctic. It's located right between the Arctic Refuge and NPRA. And that development has incrementally been expanding to the west, and it's right on the border now of NPRA. So in 1998, after a lengthy planning process, Secretary Babbitt in that administration opened 97%, or excuse me, 87% of the northeast portion of NPRA to oil and gas development, but they specifically excluded two major areas, the Colville River to the south, and in the very northern part of this area, the Teshikpuk Lake area. Because of their very, very high wildlife values, those two areas were set aside from leasing.
Now, from what I understand, a lot of players actually at that time agreed that this was based on good science and made sense. Why don't you tell us about that, too?
Well, I will. And let me just back up a moment and say that NPRA is the largest single block of public land in the United States.
Yes, it is.
It's 23.5 million acres in size, about the size of Indiana. And the first major planning area that was being looked at for development was the northeast portion of NPRA, and that was about 4.6 million acres. So scientists from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, universities, oil industry people, conservation organizations like Audubon, we all looked at this, we all had a great amount of input, and the collective decision and agreement was to go ahead and allow oil development in the petroleum reserve. It was set aside as a petroleum reserve, but when it was set aside, in 1976, Congress said that any development must take into account the valuable surface resources, and those resources should be given protection. So the agreement that was struck based on the best science available was to set aside the about 800,000 acres in the northern portion of Teshikpuk Lake area. It included the Teshikpuk Lake, which is the largest lake in northern Alaska and has very high wildlife values, particularly for water birds for nesting, for Arctic geese, and for the Teshikpuk Lake caribou herd.
Why don't you go ahead and expand on that? Let's give a sense of what we're talking about in terms of protecting this vast wildlife reserve, really only 13% of the NPRA, which was the compromise that was worked out. Why is that so important in terms of this this area?
Well, just to highlight a few of the features, this area has very high-density nesting populations of red-throated loons, the rare yellow-billed loon, common eiders, king eiders, long-tailed ducks, a number of shorebird species, and also populations of the threatened spectacle eider. This is a species that's actually listed under the Endangered Species Act as threatened. So those are birds that nest there. And then in the after breeding season, geese and many waterfowls molt their feathers, and when their wing feathers molt, they are actually flightless. And during that period of time, in July and a portion of August, these birds are very, very sensitive to any disturbance. They're very vulnerable because they can't fly. So they seek out the most valuable wetland complexes that have abundant food and low densities of predators and are very secluded. So the Teshikpuk Lake, and particularly the deep water lakes just north of Teshikpuk, between Teshikpuk Lake and the Arctic Ocean, that area is a very high value for molting geese, and is considered by most scientists as one of the most significant goose molting areas in the entire circumpolar Arctic. And it is the most important area for black brant of the Pacific Flyway. And up to 30% of the world's Pacific black brant actually molt in this area just north of Teshikpuk Lake.
Help our listeners go to your website so that they can you really have done a study, and there's some wonderful maps and other information. Particularly the maps are useful, because when a person takes a look at, for example, Teshikpuk Lake, they will notice that there's tremendous amount of smaller bodies of water that surround the area.
Well, Audubon's website can be accessed by Audubon Alaska AUDUBON, Alaska.org. And we have, as soon as you hit the website, there's an action alert that talks about Teshik Buck Lake. And then elsewhere in the on the website is a more lengthy discussion of NPRA. So there's no doubt that this area is one of the critical wetland complexes in the circumpolar Arctic, has very high value for birds, water birds particularly, but it also is the calving area for the Teshik Buck Lake caribou herd.
It's kind of interesting because it seems as if they literally have to move in order to survive because of mosquitoes, which are prey on them somehow.
Well, that's right. And the Teshik Buck Lake area has two important values for caribou. The Teshik Buck caribou herd is about 45,000 animals. It's the most important caribou herd for native subsistence harvest on the North Slope of Alaska. And in late May and early June, the caribou of this herd moved to the shores of Teshik Buck Lake, particularly the southern and eastern northern portion of the lake, and that's where they have their calves. Caribou are highly sensitive at this time and can be easily displaced by any kind of activity. After they have their calves, and around the 1st of July, when the insects really bloom, and boy, I'll tell you, having spent a lot of time on the North Slope, in July, when the biting flies and the mosquitoes are out, you can literally be covered by thousands of mosquitoes.
That's terrible. Yeah.
And the caribou are always moving, and they're trying to move into the wind. So they're moving from the calving area south of the lake up to the coast of the Arctic Ocean and back and forth. And this is a very constricted area geographically with all of these hundreds of lakes. And the caribou are negotiating this area back and forth to find insect relief, where they get good breezes and along the coast, and then back south to where they find good food. And any kind of development in this area, especially the intensive and expanding oil infrastructure development, has the great risk of displacing caribou as well as molting geese to areas of lower quality habitat.
Well, from what I understand, at this point, the region still is undeveloped, and we don't have that much exploration going on. Is that correct?
Well, Secretary Babbitt set aside the Teshik Buck Lake Surface Protection Area, and this was an area of 857,000 acres that included all of Teshik Buck Lake, and particularly the area east and north of the lake. So that area was protected. A few days ago, the BLM, under Secretary Norton, have made the decision to open up, actually to reduce those protections by 75% and open up the whole southern part of the lake as well as much of the body of the lake itself. They have protected basically a very small area of 213,000 acres north of the lake. And that protection, most scientists agree, is very, very small and inadequate to provide the important protections required of particularly molting geese and caribou.
Well, I think this is let's talk about these changes, because what we're saying is, and I'm trying to lay out the story here, that in 1998 a magnificent consensus was developed that set aside approximately 13% of this area to protect the wildlife there. And apparently, if I may kind of generalize, it sounds as if the change that has been mandated through the BLM opens up 100% of the reserve to oil and gas exploration.
Well, that's not quite true. That is related to the northwest planning area, just to the west of the northeast area.
Okay, well, set me straight.
And that 8.8 million acres was opened up. 100% of that was going to be made available, and there has been some lease sales there already. And that was done earlier this spring. But the draft EIS that has just come out this month basically opens up most of this area in the northeast planning area, the 4.6 million acres, and it just leaves a very small area of about I think it's about 7% or so of the area that is protected. That area right around Teshikpuk Lake is 213,000 acres out of the original protection that Babbitt had provided of 857,000 acres.
So what this means, ultimately, we have about a minute and a half left here, is that the area would suddenly be open to roads and exploratory, well, road building and ultimately drilling and other factors. Is that correct?
Yes, it would be open to major industrial infrastructure, connecting pipelines, drilling pads, connecting roads between some of these drilling pads. And the consensus of scientists is that this is one of the most sensitive areas and one of the most important areas in NPRA and the Arctic. And this expanded development significantly increases our risk of impacting molting geese and caribou, which will have a substantial impact on the subsistence users of the native people that live on the North Slope.
We've got about 30 seconds left, so where do you go from here?
Well, I think that people need to comment to BLM. They need to look at our website, get more information, and if they're concerned about the integrity of the Arctic, the nation's only Arctic ecosystem, this is one of the places we need to protect.
Thank you so much. John Shane, Dr. John Shane with the Alaska Audubon, thanks for being on the Wild Side News.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You bet. Get ready to head south in Alaska to one of America's most romantic national parks, the Kenai Fjords National Park. When we return here on the Wild Side News.